Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in time for KER Politics. Going to open up the show with a great example, in my opinion, and Jimmy's opinion. We've been rehearsing this thing for about a half an hour. The Kyle Rittenhouse situation exactly describes what's going on in America today that is going to be, in my opinion, underlying opinion, the downfall of America if it doesn't change. Now, a gentleman by the name of Jacob Blake was involved in proven molestation, if I'm not mistaken, Jimmy, proven molestation, and he pulled a knife on some police officers who then shot and killed him. The protest was involving the fact that the police officers, in defending themselves against a deadly weapon held by Jacob Blake, the protest involved the policemen said, enough of this, we're gonna get rid of this guy, and they did. Now, the protest that involved Kyle Rittenhouse included two other people, Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber. Both Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber were killed. We're going to talk a little bit about these two individuals. Another individual by the name of Gage Grosskreutz was also shot by Rittenhouse, but he did not perish when he was shot. Now, the fact of the matter is there is no way, as Jimmy is going to describe this story, the Kyle Rittenhouse is guilty of anything involving murder. He was protecting himself along with other people. Jimmy, tell a story, would you?
Well, I do want to clarify that Jacob Blake was actually being arrested or being the police were after him after a call of domestic abuse.
Correct.
And he had threatened a woman. Yeah. So. Not molestation directly, but domestic abuse, and he fought with the law enforcement officers. He went to the front of his car after trying to escape the officers who had him on the other side of his vehicle, and then grabbed a knife. There were no charges against the police in the long term, but in the short term, right after that, that was with the George Floyd protest, the Black Lives Matter, things erupted in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and of course, there was a narrative that the media portrayed of this, you know, unfair attacks on the Black community. And what happened, the violence lasted for 3 days in Kenosha, very violent, until President Trump actually and the Wisconsin governor put in the National Guard. On one of the nights in those protests, Kyle Rittenhouse, I believe it was the second night, Kyle Rittenhouse, a 17-year-old, had came down from his home into Wisconsin and was volunteering to protect property and help people and help clean up the city. So he started off, he was cleaning graffiti off during the day. He had bought a medical kit. He had some training, EMT training with a local fire department in his hometown. And he had a weapon that a friend of his had bought for him.
Let's talk about
an AR-15 style weapon.
For a second. It's critical that we talk about the weapon. This was not a hidden weapon that needed some type of carry permit. This was not a concealed weapon. This was a rifle, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
It was a rifle, and law enforcement had passed by Kyle Rittenhouse and some of his friends that were actually helping and thanked them for standing up to try to help protect people from some of the violence. Well, it got ugly when a group attempted to intimidate and threaten them. He actually calmed them down, according to court records and testimony by witnesses. He calmed down the group. They left, but a few of these members of the violent protesters came back and basically went after him. One guy shot at him, and I believe that was Rosenbaum initially, and then he shot back. As he was running back to the law enforcement to say that he shot someone, he was yelling and screaming. Some of the other group were chasing him down. One guy hit him with a skateboard, knocked him down, and another guy tried to grab his rifle. He shot the guy with a skateboard, and then he actually, Paul Grosskreutz, he reached up for the rifle and it shot, and he shot him in the arm. Now, what we found out in the trial that many people did not realize, because the media had presented this in a completely fabricated way, that this was anti-black, this community. Many people on the progressive left and that watched MSNBC, NBC, and other progressive media outlets did not realize that the victims, or that the people that were shot, the actually aggressors and the attackers, were actually white men. People, some of these progressive journalists just woke up to the fact that all three of the people that were involved in this incident were with Kyle Rittenhouse were actually white. The other thing that people didn't realize, even though there was video evidence from long ago that was actually broadcast on the news, that he was tripped and attacked and he was running for law enforcement, that he did not intend to kill anybody. He was defending himself. But the media had propagated this complete fabrication of him with an assault rifle attempting to take control of the neighborhood. And what you find out is actually the people that are involved in this incident that were shot while attacking him. And we'll, of course, see the outcome of this trial here very soon. Rosenbaum was a convicted pedophile. The guy that was involved in this was a convicted pedophile and had a very long rap sheet, as well as John Huber had multiple offenses for repeat offense, domestic abuse, drug paraphernalia, use of a dangerous weapon, domestic abuse, and convictions, multiple domestic abuse charges. So, and then this Paul Grotzenkreutz had an expired weapons permit because he had a conviction of a misdemeanor, drunk, intoxicated while having a weapon. All of them were involved in this protest and were actively attacking both, you know, innocent individuals, but chased this guy down to try to prove some sort of a point. And I know there's a lot of embarrassment in people's faces right now in the media, and they're trying to spin it in another way, which is really undermining credibility of the media, but also using mob influence to influence justice system in America.
Boy, I got to tell you, I watched part of the trial. I watched actually more than just part of the trial. I watched a very large portion of the trial, and I have to say that it would appear to me that the prosecutor doesn't even want to be involved in this thing. Having said that, I have to say that Rittenhouse, in my opinion, did nothing wrong. I'm getting sick and tired of convicted criminals. I'm not going to use the word felon. I'm not going to use anything strong like that. I'm just going to say convicted criminals, white and black, are the guys who are behind this terrible violence. And this terrible violence, Jimmy, simply has to stop. If it does not stop, I would have to say that America is pretty well down the tube. And that's only my opinion. That is not necessarily a fact. Isn't it interesting how I have to really couch these words? Because if I don't, if I state that I'm only talking about giving an opinion, which should be obvious, our program probably would get shut down, as so many other programs are being shut down. I simply don't understand why and how strong the movement has gotten to be against people like Kyle Rittenhouse, who really have no intention whatsoever of ever killing anybody. We're going to be right back and continue this discussion here very shortly. Stick around.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to continue our discussion of the Kyle Rittenhouse situation, which is turning out to be not a three-ring circus, but a greatest show on earth, 87-ring circus. I was looking at what was going on while Jimmy and I took a break here, and I have to tell you, even Judge Judy is now opining on it. Never seen Judge Judy prior to today, and she was being interviewed by Tucker Carlson, and she said, you know, there's no way this kid is going to get, no way this kid is going to get convicted of anything. He didn't do anything wrong. And I have to agree with that. It's what I saw today was the particular judge presiding on this case is now very opposed to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor is complaining about that, and the judge is having no part of it. What are they wasting their time for on this is what I'm wondering. I mean, it's costing the taxpayers money.
Well, beyond taxpayers, you know, costing them a tremendous amount of money, it's really undermining our justice system. You know, using a false prosecution in order to justify your inaction as a prosecutor that, you know, should have been protecting the citizens and not allowing the riots to go forward. Everybody in the Kenosha local government and, of course, in the justice system there, they allowed the riots to go on about Jacob Blake, and then they were incapable of stopping the violence, which is why volunteers came out to try to help.
Right.
Wasn't until the National Guard was called in after on the third day that actually stopped the violence. So basically what it's doing is trying to cover bad policy from them and continue down this progressive narrative that to undermine individual rights with Second Amendment,
right,
and to own guns. And that's what the objective is here. And the prosecutor, as well as many, many pundits, have been all on board. The media, the progressive media, the corporate media have been very much on board with this entire effort to smear Kyle Rittenhouse and make the claim that white supremacy and, you know, vigilantism was the cause of all this issue, which is absolutely turning out to be false based on all testimony.
Well, what's really kind of funny is the guy who really kind of instigated the, you know, skinhead moniker, et cetera, was the president of the United States. That's been brought out very, very effectively. He saw something that he apparently rubbed him the wrong way or something. Apparently it was very brief. And he said, you know, he called Rittenhouse a skinhead. Well, how can the president of the United States do that? I'll tell you, this has been a really, really bad week for the Democrats.
Well, it just, again, you know, as a nation, we can't allow this manipulation of information that the media, corporate media, is continually pushing on Americans. And as I, you know, as I have talked about, there are so many people that did not know the facts of this case, but made tremendous amount of comments and, you know, way too many mainstream media outlet anchors and news quote, news people, made accusations without ever looking at the facts, not even looking at the original videos of what happened. And they tried to paint this in a certain way. And that's just manipulating the population. It's gaslighting the population. It's actually undermining any confidence, not only in the media, but in our justice system. And of course, it's, you know, at the detriment of individuals. We've seen this happen over and over again. Russia collusion has turned out to be false. The Covington kids, you know, in D.C., that entire debacle turns out to be false. The Ukraine investigation, the impeachment over Ukraine. Oh, it turns out that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden were the ones that were actually doing that. Each of these cases are actually turning around and slapping mainstream media hosts in the face, and they are doubling, tripling, quadrupling down and continuing to argue. And the Kyle Rittenhouse and this, you know, self-defense trial is no different, and they keep pushing it, and it seems to me that they're even going to go farther and farther down the road, especially watching some of the comments from Don Lemon and CNN pundits and MSNBC pundits in the last, you know, 24 hours on what's happening in the trial. They're trying to cover their own lies, and they're building lie upon lie upon lie upon lie. they're manipulating the population, they're socially engineering the population, and it's really, really damaging.
Well, it's more than just a little damaging. It's making the United States look absolutely ridiculous. I got to tell you, if I was to predict where the pendulum is going to go next, I would say the pendulum right now is diametrically opposed to public opinion about mainland China, public opinion about Russia, and the public opinion is going to shift, in my opinion, dramatically as much as it can over to anti-United States. Everybody that's anti-U.S. right now is proving to be absolutely accurate, and the only way that that can change is in the next major election, and that's when a new president will be elected, as you know, etc., etc., and next major election. That is a critical election, in my opinion, and I don't know if Donald Trump is going to be the guy. You seem to think 100% that he will. I don't know. I think that something else might make a little more sense to get us back in power, us being Republicans and conservatives, but I'm going to leave it up to you. You're the expert.
Well, I think we've got this 2022 legislative races, which will make a big difference on the direction of the country. I think Trump has the advantage because, one, he's got the experience with 4 years in there. Two, the entire cascade of lies is beginning to collapse. And a lot of the bad feelings people had were based on these lies. So they're looking and they're questioning, double, thinking, what the heck? Joe Biden is not being the guy that everyone thought he was supposed to be.
And
our NATO allies, our friends, we are letting them down. Afghanistan, all kinds of relationships. There's so many different issues out there, border control, that Europe is laughing at us right now. Western society is laughing at us. But the Russians and the Chinese are laughing even harder because we're falling right into their goals, mostly the Chinese. The Russians, I think, are actually starting to step out and say, this is just not right. They're actually standing up for free speech. Putin made a comment last week about that. We've got complete lockdown with YouTube on Facebook on the Kyle Rittenhouse issues. There's so many things. The control freaks are out there. They want to keep power. They are willing to push any narrative in order for them to keep and take power. And unfortunately, they're using law enforcement, which we'll talk about in the next few segments, to do it.
Yeah.
The latest thing is Steve Bannon indicted for contempt of Congress when Hillary Clinton completely avoided it, never got charged. Numerous occasions where Democrats didn't, but once again, selective justice.
Jimmy, we got to let the news guys into the room. Ladies and gentlemen, time for a quick commercial and top of the hour news break. Jim and I will be back shortly.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Time to continue the KE Report, KER Politics specifically. We are going to discuss some of the topics that we discussed this past week. We're doing this for the benefit of our radio audience. Want to start out talking about some of the economic issues that we talked about. We have a huge, huge inflation going on right now. Grocery prices are up about 30%, and the energy prices are up significantly. I'm paying roughly $1.50 a gallon more than I was paying for gasoline, let's say, about a month ago, somewhere in that area. Jimmy, you've got some ideas that you think is causing this. Let's talk first about inflation. Let's talk about energy prices, and let's talk about food prices. Food prices, I don't think there's anything necessarily nefarious about that. But the energy prices, I like what you have to say.
Well, I look comprehensively at inflation and what's happening right now. So clearly the biggest reason why we have inflation is because the federal government has pumped about $6 trillion into the economy over the COVID crisis. So we're flooding the economy with dollars, which reducing value. And of course, that's the simple version. But let's talk at some of the impacts here, you know, with food prices, with what we're seeing with the transportation and distribution problems around the country with supply chain breakdowns. A lot of these restrictions are related to regulation and policies that are put in place by this current administration that are slowing things down and having a very significant impact on supply chain. If there's less items, then of course manufacturers and producers and retailers can increase their prices because demand's up. So we're going to see higher demand. We see fewer things on the shelves. Prices are going up. You also have a very significant labor problem. Part of it is because people are afraid to go back to work for COVID because half the population thinks that COVID's the end of the world and they're scared to death of it. The other half of the population says this is ridiculous, but they're being fired from their jobs because they don't want to get vaccinations for an untested, unproven technology that's it's basically potentially harmful to them, and they don't feel at risk because as we get more information, we realize the COVID crisis is really not as much of a crisis as what everybody feared. So those factors are all there. But let me tell you what you brought up, which I think is really important for people to consider. There are senior members of the Biden regime right now publicly stating over the last week that this is not a problem, that one, it's transitory, that inflation's transitory, and specifically with energy, hey, maybe this is a good thing. And I'm just summarizing here, but a number of senior members of the administration are saying maybe this isn't a bad thing that energy prices are so high because that'll push us away from fossil fuels. And the ultimate goal of affecting climate change. So it seems to me that there's a specific agenda within this administration, this regime, that is attempting to social engineer economic impact on people in order to achieve their political ends of climate change. And I think they're getting support around the world with it. And the problem is it's hurting the most vulnerable in our society, the people that need, you know, that work at $15 an hour jobs or have to drive to work or take their kids to school. And of course it's impacting everything. And it's it's really potentially undermining all trust and faith in the American dollar. But again, that pushes people towards a more stable, what they believe to be a stable currency, some sort of cryptocurrency, a globalized currency. I'm afraid that's what the ultimate objectives are right now.
Well, that's an interesting point. There's no question about it. Rising fuel prices will push people away from fossil fuels. But the fact of the matter is that change, that transition would take more than just about 6 months. You'd have to get people hang on a second, bud. You'd have to get people necessarily to make the transition to electric cars, et cetera, et cetera. If that's what they want, you know, I don't agree with it personally. Well, it doesn't matter to me because I can afford it. It wouldn't bother me that much if gas prices got that high. That we'd be forced to go to electric cars. But in terms of bothering society as a whole, it would be an absolute killer. What would that accomplish for the administration if that happened, Jimmy?
Well, actually, it'll cause the destruction of our economy. And let's look about how do we transition to electric cars? What produces the electricity? It doesn't come from thin air. There's no way we can support it through solar. There's no way we can sort it through wind energy. There's no way it's not even possible to do it. So what are you doing? You're depending on other energy sources. Where are they? What are they? Right now, it would be impossible to move off this. So what are they going to achieve with this? They're going to achieve basically damaging the economy in order to, for some political end, to appease a very powerful but influential group of people that are dedicated to the idea that the world is going to collapse in a few years because of our climate. But the reality is, I think that has nothing to do with it. I think it's a tool take down borders, to look at the world in a global system to where big financial corporations and big finance people actually can move money through cryptocurrencies. They can move money with and labor across borders without controls, that they take away basically the way that we, that our society is built right now to achieve their political ends and their power and financial ends. I think they're doing nothing, and this administration in the long term is actually undermining themselves, trust and faith in society, and there's absolutely no way that we can meet these goals. We can't do it. It's not going to happen.
Jim, you
it's just
were
a reality.
Yeah, you were talking a while back about writing a book, if I'm not mistaken. Boy, if you could put all of this down in a novel, you could really get people to stop and think. I don't know if you have time to do that, but that would be, in my opinion, if it were correctly written, if it were well written, et cetera, it would be an immediate bestseller, because there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there right now that I think are absolutely ridiculous. This does not happen to be one of them. This definitely falls into the category of a conspiracy theory, but I have to say this. There are no negative aspects that I can hear in what you are saying, and I think it's very, very sad that this is going on. It's really sad because a lot of people believe this is the best thing that could happen to American society. I don't happen to fall into that camp whatsoever. Transitions are fine, but transitions take time.
I think the rich and powerful, the global corporatists that control the media outlets that are actually perpetuating some of this propaganda, there's an agenda there. They're, in my view, in my opinion, and the facts show an agenda that they're attempting to shape and engineer society in a way that will benefit them best. And they think they know better for the average person.
Oh, there's no question whatsoever. Yeah, no question.
That's the ultimate struggle right now between those that think they know better than others and they will tell them what to do, or allowing us to think, individuals think for themselves and make choices for themselves. It's COVID, it's the media, it's Department of Justice, it's the administration, it's propaganda, it's corporate influence. It's amazing how much of an impact all this has in such a short period of time, and really in just a year and a half since this COVID outbreak.
Yep. Well, let me tell you one other thing, and COVID has a little bit to do with this. There's no question about that. It's got actually more than just a little bit. I have gotten into the habit of utilizing Whole Foods, which is an Amazon company. Whole Foods delivers, et cetera, et cetera. I'm paying a little bit more for my groceries. I am a member of Prime, so the delivery fee is not astronomical. It's not a killer necessarily. But I am so used to having my groceries delivered in a timely manner that I am almost thinking illogically about grocery delivery utilizing Whole Foods. That same thing is going to happen in the future to America. That same general philosophy is going to happen. And then Mr. Bezos is going to become even wealthier and wealthier. Ladies and gentlemen, be right back. Project Veritas. You know, Jimmy, one thing that you and I also talked about last week that I think we should do again as a service to our radio listeners, and that's this absolutely ridiculous situation that is caused by the Project Veritas conundrum that's going on. You want to summarize that, please?
Yeah, so Project Veritas, kind of organized by James O'Keefe. He's had a lot of success in the past by undercover sting journalism outlining some corruption. One of the groups that his first kind of claim to fame was a group called Acorn that was supporting the Obama administration, and they were basically fraudulently manipulating voters in elections, and there were some illegal things that are happened. He brought that out through investigative journalism. Since then, he's grown. He gets a lot of information on tech. He's got people out that actually he tries to encourage people to be whistleblowers and step out. And he puts journalists undercover in different organizations, at Facebook, for example, and at Google and some of these other groups where people have gone undercover. They talk to senior leadership. One of them was with Pfizer just recently. And he highlights very important issues that people need to see. And this is the way 60 Minutes used to work. This is the way a lot of journalism used to work. However, it's going against the narrative because a lot of people claim he's just a conservative outlet fighting for conservative principles. Basically, he's fighting for transparency, in my view. And what happened here recently was Ashley Biden, Joe Biden's daughter, she either left her diary in a house that she moved from, or somebody took that diary. Some of that information was put out prior to the November election last year. Project Veritas had information on that diary. They tried to investigate it. They didn't publish it because they couldn't verify some if it, whether it was factual or even belonged to her. But the bottom line, they knew they had it. They reached out to the Justice Department, to local authorities to say they had it, to try and verify it. The FBI, under the Merrick Garland Department of Justice, just raided a journalist, James O'Keefe's apartment, and two other journalists' apartments a couple of days before in order to find that information related to that diary. And that diary, the information in the diary, actually paints Joe Biden in a very bad light with how he handled his children to the point of actual maybe some abuse. So now we have Merrick Garland's Department of Justice, the FBI, conducting a raid on a journalist that had information that they did not publish that may make this administration look bad. They handcuffed James O'Keefe at his apartment, according to his statements. They had multiple agents there that he was half-dressed, and then they searched his apartment. A federal judge, they collected cell phones. I'm sorry, the FBI collected cell phones. A federal judge actually had to intervene and told the FBI to stop collecting information from his cell phones as they review this case because it is so apparent an abuse of power by Department of Justice for political ends. And to top that off, and this is what is most disturbing, almost immediately after they confiscated this information from James O'Keefe and Project Veritas, somebody from the FBI or in that investigation leaked it to the New York Times about information, privileged information from a lawsuit that Project Veritas has against the New York Times, and the New York Times published that data. This is beyond belief. It's beyond criminal. It's beyond acceptable by a Western society to watch this happen with our Justice Department. Me living in the Republic of Georgia, me living in Albania, me serving in former Soviet countries, I did not see this level of influence and corruption without somebody pushing back, even in those countries. It is crazy. It is crazy what is happening right now with the Department of Justice.
Well, it's more than a little crazy, as they're going way overboard. But let's talk about another issue that we discussed briefly last week, and that teams up with this one very, very well. The authoritarian stance that the executive office is taking right now. Now, the judicial system, which was created within the system of checks and balances of U.S. government, as was the Congress, etc., you got three branches of power. You've got the executive branch, you got the Congress, and you've got the judicial branch. And the fact of the matter is, that's the administrative branch. And the fact of the matter is that the judicial branch has said it is unconstitutional. You cannot force employers who have more than 100 employees involved with their companies, you cannot force those people, those organizations, to force their employees to immunize. And Biden said, don't worry about what they're saying. It doesn't matter. What I'm saying as the President of the United States, and of course I'm paraphrasing here, what Joe Biden is saying, the fact of the matter is we got to stop this COVID thing. I know how to do it best, period. Immunization within organizations that have 100 or more employees must be mandatory, even though the judicial system does not agree with that. What are your comments on that one? That one's pretty blatant, Jim.
Well, there's so many areas where they're ignoring judicial process and the separate but equal branch of our court system. You know, the legislative, judicial, and executive branches of government were designed to balance each other. And this administration is tilting that balance. And there are a tremendous number of people that are supporting that and not questioning it, including members of the legislative branch and members of the judicial branch that are actually supporting some of these policies without actually standing up against them. If they can't stand for their own separate but equal branch of government, then we will be doomed as a nation, because the fundamental principle of our system of governance to ensure we do not get tyrannical leadership is the system of checks and balances. Ignoring it is dangerous. And what this administration has done time and time again, there are numerous instances of it on border issues, on a whole number of issues. They've just ignored and pushed forward. And they're just going based on mob rule. And again, that's what we talked about initially in the show with Rittenhouse, where you're using the media and you're using public opinion in a twisted way to engineer society in order to achieve your political ends. And it's incredibly dangerous.
Well, if you don't think it's incredibly dangerous, all you have to do is look at what happened just a few months ago in Seattle in the CHOP. Notice I said more than 1 month ago. It was a while back. It happened last summer, actually, which is about a few months ago. Now, having said that, look what happened there. Look what's happened in Wisconsin. Look what's happened in Portland, Oregon right now. It's absolutely abysmal for the future of our country. Jimmy, wrap it up, if you would. We got 2 minutes. 1 minute.
Yeah, the crime rate in major urban Democratic-run cities is out of control. I will say this. The media is centered in these areas. You know, we've got L.A., basically since New York, D.C., Boston, Seattle, San Francisco. Those are the kind of the key influence areas, because the media is centered in most of the headquartered in most of those areas. They live in a complete bubble from reality. They live in a world and that they don't see the rest of the country in. And, you know, the rest of the country is not living that way, but we see a tremendous amount of problems in these same areas. And the media is just basically, you know, gaslighting people and saying, well, there's not a problem. And then they're blaming, completely twisting it, blaming on conservatives or Republicans or white supremacists. You know, that's the biggest issue right now. It's white supremacy, and everything is about race and destructive. And what they don't realize is that a big portion of America does not think nor live that way. And you know, they're going on about their lives, and eventually it's going to come up to them. And this is what happened in Virginia with the election last week, and you know, some of the impact in New Jersey, where you know, a truck driver beats out the Senate leader in the New Jersey legislature, you know, with spending no money. People are pushing back. They're going to push back, which is why I have hope this nation will survive, and we will continue to go through this struggle right now. But we've got to stop it. But eventually we'll get things back to where they're balanced. I'm hoping to see that soon.
Yeah, what you're saying is we hope this nation survives in the manner that it was actually created. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get some comments. We'll be back with you next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.